You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You're listening to BGN Radio with Brandon Lee Gowton and Jimmy Kemsky.
Yo, buddy. This is BGN Radio, episode number 382. I am Jimmy Kemsky. I'm very cool. With me, as always, is Brandon Lee Gowton, also very cool, of BleedingGreenNation.com. Second video. Hello, friends. I was told by one of the comments not to look down like at myself or you in the picture and instead look up at the camera.
Stare into the camera the whole time menacingly.
I can't do that. I can't just look at, like, because it's just blackness like on the top of my computer screen. I don't know. I need like a face.
It doesn't feel very human, right?
Yeah, right. So, I mean, I do. So when I have like TV hits and they're on Zoom or whatever, I do it then because it would look really weird, like on TV, if I were just like looking down, like, like this would be a weird look to be on TV like this. But I think for a podcast, I think it's fine. But I appreciate the suggestion, but it is one that is going to go unfollowed. So my apologies to, and thank you for listening to the person who had that suggestion. And thank you for all watching the video and, you know, listening to the podcast itself. But anyway, let's get past that. We are going to get to a few stay or go items on the offensive side of the ball. We'll have like a half dozen guys that will debate whether we think they're going to stay with the Eagles in 2024 or go. We're going to talk about this weird, I mean, it's not even a story. It's just nothingness surrounding AJ Brown and just the team as a whole about how they kind of got torn apart at the end of the season. There's no specifics whatsoever on what exactly anyone's talking about with that. It's just weird. And I've mostly ignored it because it's all stupid and like, give me something to, you know, bite my teeth into, or just STFU, if you will. And we'll also get to some of the coaching updates that the Eagles announced. I guess that was on Friday they did that. We're recording this on a Saturday morning, by the way. But before we get to all that, are we doing Righteous Felon first or wrong
crowd? That's right, Jimmy.
Righteous Felon. Well, that's you then. That's,
as you can see on my hat here on the Bleeding Green Nation YouTube channel. Also, by the way, I had someone reach out about how, like, you know, you can see my Twitter handle here, Brandon Lee Gowton, my full name, and then my Twitter handle at Brandon Gowton on the video screen, where yours, I think last week was just Jimmy or whatever you put in there. And okay, someone was like, why did you like not include Jimmy's Twitter handle? I'm like, I didn't do that. He did that. That's him. Like, I'm not, if you want to, you can put it there. It's up. You can.
Brandon doesn't want me to have more Twitter followers. Right. He doesn't want me to add to my listener base.
Suppressing your, I only say your Twitter handle like every podcast, or put it in the episode description as well. Anyway, Righteous Felon, Craft Jerky, as you can see here. If you want a cool hat like this, you can get it at righteousfelon.com using discount code BGN15 for 15% off your order. The best possible meat snacks in the game when it comes to the beef jerky or the biltong or the meat sticks that I like a lot, that my dad personally orders often. Really good. A lot of different flavors. Can't go wrong. Go to righteousfelon.com. Use discount code BGN15 for 15% off your order. We really appreciate you supporting them to help support the podcast and whatnot. Okay, Jimmy. So we're starting with what?
The nothingness? Should we just start with the nothingness?
Yes, let's start with the nothingness. So I guess it's worth bringing up the timeline of kind of all this. It's been a weird week. It's been a weird week, especially as someone who, like you, like we write about this stuff or talk about it on a podcast. So you kind of have to like be aware of what's going on. But like you said, at the same time, It seems like a lot of nothing. Now, that being said, there was a credible reporter who put some stuff out there that was kind of, I think, spurred by what else was going on. But anyway, starting from the beginning. Okay, so early in the week, you have Craig Carton on FS1 do commit the cardinal sin of what you hate, where it's like,
I hate
you
know it so something, much.
Just say it. Don't be like,
yeah,
well, actually. And also, like, why is this coming up now? It's Eagles season ended in early January, right?
Right.
It's coming up
yeah.
at the end of February that, oh, I know the secret. I think people, too, have just become so obsessed with, like, well, what happened? And it's like, I don't know if it's a mystery. It's kind of just like they sucked. And
yeah.
sometimes NFL teams suck. It's not like the Eagles are the first team to ever. I mean, are they one of the first teams to go on the collapse? They did, sure. But are they the first team to ever have a bad stretch? No. Anyway, so Craig Carton goes on FS1. He says that thing about it's kind of nebulous. I think fan speculation gets involved. I saw some claims, and I want to be clear here. There's nothing substantial about this. But like, there's talk of like infidelity or something. Like, there's like a lot of different, just like coming out of nowhere, yeah. weird rumors.
People just guessing. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is the danger, seems dramatic, but that's like the downside of someone throwing out something so nebulous like that, is then people are going to fill the void. And then some people, I think this whole thing, this whole week, has really kind of been a testament to how like we need better media literacy, because I think there's just like a lot of misinformation out there, and then people contribute to that and then share things and then perpetuate things, and then that kind of takes on a life of its own. And then people get mad at the media, even though I think they're also part of it in terms of spreading misinformation. I'm not saying media isn't at fault here at some level, but also I think the response to the media is also part of an issue. So I kind of really just went on a I got off track there, but the point being, Craig Carton puts that out. Then we have Derek Gunn. I think that's then, again, a credible reporter, we love D-Gun, says that, I guess, kind of in a response to that, and clearly coming from the, it seemed like the team at some level, or certainly from a certain source, a source with a agenda, as most sources would have. Number one, that Jalen Hurts, you know, was needs to be like more like available, I guess. That's kind of what was consistent with what we had on Bleeding Green Nation with Joe Santoliquido's reporting that, more so, I should say, he was pulled in a lot of directions last offseason mm-hmm. after the contract. And that is...
Which is totally normal, by the way. Like,
you yeah.
kind of expect that.
Right.
And you would also expect that a kid that's... I mean, so Jeffrey Lurie has talked... I'm sorry to cut you off there, but has talked a lot about his, you know, Jalen Hurts' maturity, even went as far as to say, like, he's more mature than, you know, my son, who is, you know, 4 or 5 years older than Jalen Hurts or whatever. And certainly Jalen Hurts is very mature, like, for his age. But when you make $255 million suddenly overnight, and, you know, and you're the leader of a football team where football is life in the city where you play. Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a ton of pressure, and like D-Gun said, you're going to be, you know, kind of torn in a lot of different directions. Mm-hmm. People wanting you for this, people wanting you for that. You know, asked to be, be more than just a quarterback of the team, and you know, reading defenses and making checks at the line. It's more than that. It's building relationships with all the players, both on the offense and to some degree on the defense, mm-hmm. and you know, kind of being that guy. You're kind of become something of a presidential kind of figure player wise within the structure of a team. And it's hard to do. And when you're 25, like when I was 25 years old, I could barely keep my head on straight selling copiers. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, the difference between that and, you know, the weight of the world on Jalen Hurts' shoulders, you can understand where, you know, maybe there were some growing pains with suddenly being this immense figure. All of a sudden after a month, and really it only happened because he was amazing in 2022. Uh-huh. And obviously he took a step back in 2023. And then when things aren't going well and you're not winning games the same way that you were a year ago, early in the season, and then you have the epic collapse down the stretch. Yeah. I mean, it's all going to go badly at that point. And people are going to be looking for things to point their fingers at. And then and obviously you know, the top two guys whenever things really snowball and go badly. It's going to be the head coach and it's going to be the quarterback. Like, those are the top two guys that people are going to be, you know, putting under the microscope. So, yeah, I mean, certainly, yeah, he's, you know, being pulled in a lot of different directions. And there's going to be difficulty. I mean, it's almost an impossible task to kind of handle that kind of stress and, you know, and scrutiny.
And on that, I think there's been some sentiment that, like, that's coming at Jalen Hurts and trying to rip him down. I don't think that's the case. I think that is being put out there in a way that is sympathetic to him. And
yes, kind of agreed.
Not totally trying to make excuses, but just trying to explain why he may have not been at his peak version. And also, I think there's a very high confidence level that he, like, there was a learning process from last offseason and thus will make sure moving forward he is a little bit more focused and not being pulled as much or not putting as much attention elsewhere. So that's not like a knock on him to me so much as I think some people have been taking it. The second part of what D-Gun had to say makes me laugh a little bit because I don't doubt there isn't any level of truth to it, but like this idea that Nick Sirianni, you know, well, I should say what the actual report said from D-Gun was that, you know, Nick Sirianni can kind of like get into it, as we've seen, with players on the sideline. Mm-hmm. And Big Dom being there, Dom DeSandro, typically is a good presence because he kind of calms Nick down a little bit and keeps him in check. Which I don't doubt there's some level of truth to that. But at the same time, like, that's pathetic. Like, why is this guy the head coach if he needs a guy who is like wrangling him on the sideline like that? And also this idea that well, they just needed Big Dom back. He was there for the playoff game that they lost 32-9, right? Like, it's not like he's the magical fix. Oh, you just get Big Dom back and then Sirianni's great. Like, no, it doesn't. I don't think it works like that. Is Big Dom important to the organization? And does him being there ultimately, I think, help or be a good thing? Sure. Yeah. I'm not trying to doubt him at all, but I think that was a little lame for me to see.
I mean, I've seen the wrangling before. Like, after the Chiefs game, you know how, like, you saw him coming through the tunnel and he's yelling at the Chiefs fans like, who's like, who's laughing now, like, who's talking now, Chiefs fans, like, you know, that kind of stuff. And you see Dom like kind of get him out of there. And then, like, I don't know the time frame of when that happened to when, like, because I guess, you know, on the way from the field it back into the locker room, you know, we're all the reporters were like in like the bowels of the stadium waiting, you know, waiting. We kind of stand there after games just to kind of let the listeners know. We kind of stand around and like down in the bowels of the stadium for 10-15 minutes or so waiting for the coach to kind of talk to the team after the game is over. And, you know, sometimes guys get like a head start on like showering up or whatever, and then they let us in and we get to talk to the players. But we're hanging out like sort of out in the, like, in the hallways of the bowels of the stadium for a little while. And when Nick came off the field on his way to the locker room, he's yelling at Elliot because I guess Elliot had done like a comparison of the two teams before the game. And he gave the Chiefs the edge at the combination of head coach and quarterback, because of course he did. He's absolutely not wrong in any way on that, obviously.
Right.
And Nick was like, yeah, who's the better coach and quarterback now, Elliot? And Dom like had to get him away from, and then, again, like, it wasn't like in his face or anything. Like, he was like, you know, good, yeah, like, you know, like 15-20 yards away, like yelling down to you know, the group of reporters. And Dom kind of had to, like, you know, come on, man, like, come on, get in the locker room, come on. Right. So I've seen it like personally, right, like Dom wrangling and whatever. I'm sure that happens constantly on the field with, you know, him trying to calm him down, getting him away from officials or players or what have you. I don't think that's a reason for the season having gone south. It's a nugget. It's a nugget, maybe, like, that he has to be controlled sometimes on the sidelines. But, you know, it's certainly not the reason that the season had the downfall that it did.
Right. So then, you know, AJ Brown kind of, I think, responds. Well, I shouldn't say AJ Brown. I should say AJ Brown's Twitter account, which apparently
it's not even him.
Got hacked during the Super Bowl. Well,
I think somebody's squatting on it is what happened.
Right, because he shut it down. Like, he deactivated it.
Yeah.
So therefore,
and someone snapped it up real quick, and they're squatting on it. Is my understanding of what happened?
Yeah, like the handle came back into circulation, or into use or whatever.
Screw anyone that does that. Like, go to hell. Like, you know, that is garbage. Give him his handle back, you moron. That's ridiculous that somebody would do that.
I didn't expect you to care this much. But in any case, AJ Brown's Twitter account tweets out something how, you know, Philly media, blah, 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 is lame, which is like, Philly media isn't even the one who started. Like, Craig Carton isn't Philly media. So that's
Philly media has nothing to do with any of this stuff. Right.
So, but, well, you know, I would say not nothing, because I think some of what AJ ultimately is responding to, you know, is some of the trade speculation, which then kind of got, and, you know, as a player, I don't know how closely you're paying attention to it in terms of actually knowing, like, well, is this just a show topic that they put on WIP, which is ultimately came from like a poll, or is this someone saying, you might, like, as a player, I don't know, maybe you think that's the same thing as someone saying, I want this player to be traded, or you kind of mistake it for, you think the fans are being like, well, we want AJ Brown to be traded. I don't know. I don't know what's going on in AJ Brown's head, but he did talk on Friday, called into WIP to, and I think he has control of his Twitter account again, by the way. I think he does have, he said he has it back now, which I don't, whatever. Anyway, he called into WIP, and we have an article on bleedingyournation.com about what he said, and obviously you can check out the audio wherever, but it's just weird, man. I think it goes back to a media literacy thing. I think it goes, this idea that, and obviously I'm biased, I'm coming from a standpoint of where I am part of the media, but I don't think the media is a monolith. I don't think we all have the same goals, and it's not like we collude. Not like we get together and like decide on this kind of stuff.
Let's get AJ Brown for no reason this offseason.
And also what we do is very different. Like, I don't do the same thing that WIP does. That's not the same thing. And I don't think anything is inherently necessarily like wrong or bad. It's just different mediums or different people. If you don't like it, you don't have to consume it. You can ignore it. And I just think it's really gone awry. And I also think like this idea, the media does have an agenda, and I hate so much the perception that like negativity sells, because that is not, at least in my experience, I can't speak for other formats, radio or whatever. In terms of what I can talk about, like page views, podcast downloads, that is not true. Negativity does not sell. It does not. I've seen when the Eagles are bad and everything's negative, like 2020 or, you know, 2015, take a year, whatever, and the numbers are way down, and they're way higher, like a year, like last year in 2022, where they're going to the Super Bowl and everything. So that's just not true. And I think anytime, you know, someone says something negative, it's like, well, they're only doing this for attention. It's not necessarily true. So I don't know. It's been a weird week, because like, it's almost like I feel like I should be writing an article about this, but I don't even know what to say, because there isn't really actually much here. Mm-hmm. So now we're talking about it on a podcast. I guess, do you have any other thoughts on the everything?
Yeah, like my sports editor, Evan Macy, like, you know, I was talking to him and he was like, I don't even know how we cover this. And I'm like, I don't think we do, because it's nothing. There's nothing to it. There's nothing. There's no story. It's just, there's just somebody's putting vague things into the ether. And what are we? Yeah. Like, what are we supposed to do with it? And like, there's nothing there.
Write the headline for the story.
I don't want to give it credence either. Like, I don't want to, I don't want to give any of this credence, because it just leads to more of this nothing crap. Like, so let's get back to Craig Carton for a second. Like, Craig Carton used to be, he used to be on the radio in Philly and was a producer, I think, for Missinelli way back in the day when Missinelli was on WIP. And then, you know, Carton went on to, you know, have a huge career in New York with Boomer in the Morning. They took over for Imus, I believe. Mm. And then like, they were number one in the city there for like a while. And then he went to jail for a while for some like ticket scheme. I don't know all the details of it, but he went away for a little while, came back, and now he's on FS1. But back in the day when he was in Philly, he actually came out with a report about Eric Lindros, mm-hmm. where he said Lindros missed a game because he was hungover from the night before. And like, the Flyers, I think, like sued the radio station or something like that. And later they admitted that he did indeed miss that game because he was hungover. So that's an instance where like Craig Carton came out with a pretty inflammatory, report or rumor or whatever it was, mm-hmm. that turned out to be true, but he was specific in like what happened. In this case, he's just like, oh, something happened that one. that would break apart any group of men. It's like, what? What? Say what you know or shut the F up. If you got something, say it. If you don't have it good enough where you can put it out there and feel confident that your information is good, shut the F up. It's the worst kind of reporting. My understanding is that it's rampant in the NBA and it's starting to creep in a little bit in the NFL. Like Josina Anderson earlier in the offseason had something to the effect of like, you know, things are going to happen with the Eagles. Like, no kidding. Things are going to happen with every team in the NFL. Like, what? And by the way, what happened? What was the thing that she thought was going to happen? That happened. That Matt Patricia was going to get fired? No shit. Sean Desai was going to be gone. Like, okay. So, just the whole, I know something, but I'm not going to tell you. Eyes emoji. Like,
yeah.
It's just the absolute worst. And I hate it with every fiber of my being, not just as a journalist. Like if I were just a fan that was like following a team or whatever, and someone came out, it's just totally useless. Look at me. Self-indulgent garbage. And that's my
rant. I agree with that. And to be clear, I'm not trying to defend Craig Carton, but I'm going to say that he probably does maybe know something. Now, I don't know, you know, what it is or if it's there's an idea it gets said a lot like that the media just literally makes something up. And I think for the most part, that is not true. I think for the vast majority of the time, it's not just like, well, I'm bored, I'm just going to say something random and make it up. I don't think that happens. But I agree with you in the case that if you do know something like this, you should actually not say anything or actually say it. You don't get credit. You don't get any credit for being like, see, like if Craig Carton, if something happens to the Eagles and he tries to take a victory lap on that. No, like, because if you knew it, you got to say it.
Yeah. You say what happened, but what was it?
Because he could take a victory lap on
what specifically happened.
To your point, like anything could happen and be like, see, that was it. It's like, okay, it's easy to say after the fact. So now he did have the line about like, we'll see if a certain player, high profile player is still on the team, I guess. Like that's kind of what he was more hinting at.
Okay.
But I don't know, whatever.
But there's still a pretty good chance on that hitting. Like, sure. Fletcher Cox could sign with some other team in free agency like he almost did a year ago. And then what are you going to do, a victory lap because Fletcher Cox signed with the Jets or some other team? Like, come on.
Yeah. So I think Zach Berman, who you were just on a podcast with for Jeff McLean's Uncovering the Birds, right?
Yes, correct.
A live Q&A. Shout out to the BGN radio reference by Jeff at the end there. But Zach had a good point on his, you know, the PHOY podcast about how like the Eagles have some level of being complicit in this in terms of they don't necessarily owe anyone anything, but hey, maybe if you're making like Vic Fangio and Kellen Moore available around this time, people would be talking about that instead of this. And I'm not saying like, I'm not trying to justify people are justified for potentially making stuff up or whatever because the Eagles aren't doing anything. That's not what I'm saying. But I am saying that when you do have this time of year where it's one of the slower times of year because, you know, Super Bowl's over and we're not yet at the combine. We're not yet at the start of free agency or anything. Mm-hmm. There's just not much going on. And I think people look to fill the void. So I'm not saying everything in that void is made up, but what gets attention, what gets talked about is stuff that isn't necessarily substantive or really real like you're talking about here. So I don't know, it was just like a weird week because it seems like the fan, you know, frustration with the media is high and I get it, but I don't think like the media is this evil thing out to get the team that like people make it to be. And I think people don't ever really, I'm not saying everyone needs to appreciate the media more and bow down, but I don't think people, there's no comments when, you know, there are some when there's like a really good story about a player, you know, like a deep dive insight into someone, you know, I those kind of stories do get positive feedback. You'll see like, oh, great article by so-and-so, but I feel like that's the conversation. It's not like, you know what? The media is a really good tool because we get this inside look at the Eagles or whatever. It's not, there's never, that never gets acknowledged. No. It's only an evil thing we're trying to get out. So I'm just saying, like, if we're going to be, you know, if we're going to point out the pros also, and cons.
It never like, oh, good job on your, on when you said, like, I think this player is going to be good or bad. Good job. Right. Like when you said that.
Oh, you believed in that player. You were right.
Right.
More like
it's always, it's usually the other way around where you get something wrong. If you get an opinion wrong on something, and you'll hear about it 6 months later.
And whatever. I'm not saying the media is a victim. That's fine. I'm just saying, whatever. You know, just, you know, if we wanted to point out both sides. Anyway, that's what the media is supposed to do, ostensibly.
Real quick thing. I thought you made a good point on like the lull in the off season right now, where anything comes out at all, it's going to spread like crazy because there's nothing else to talk about. Mm-hmm. I can speak firsthand knowledge on that. Like back in, I think it was 2014. During OTAs, I just like seventh or eighth bullet point down. I mentioned that Matt Barkley had a sideline throw that went, took a long time to get there. And it's a sideline throw. So you're trying to put some heat on that. And I was like, yeah, I don't know about his arm strength. I think if he's going to, you know, make it in the league, like he's going to be a prominent player in the league, he's going to have to be really good at anticipation throws, getting the ball out on time, because he's just not going to have the kind of arm strength to compensate for, you know, any kind of, being off schedule on a play. And Reddit picked it up and was like, somebody on Reddit that like they kind of like took that one bullet point and like as their headline on reposting my OTA practice notes was basically like, Matt Barkley has a rag arm. Matt Barkley having been apparently he was like on Reddit a lot.
He's
like
a Redditor.
Part of that community. Yeah. And he saw that, of course. And in the comments of that post, he wrote something to the effect of like, shut up, Jimmy. You don't know what the defense was on that play. You don't know what the play call was. You don't know what the assignment was. You don't know what kind of throw I'm trying to make in that situation, blah, 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 blah. And if you think that my arm strength isn't up to par or whatever, then why don't we have a catch sometime? Okay. So that, like, if that had happened during like free agency or near the draft time or during the season, it had been just a blip that nobody really paid attention to. But it happened in June, and one media outlet got wind of it somehow. They wrote an article on it, and then boom, every national media outlet in the country had it. Everyone, like all of them. Because at the time, like Matt Barkley was, you know, was not too far removed from being a 4-year starter at a powerhouse college football program. And, you know, at one time he was, of course, thought to potentially maybe be like the number one overall pick in the draft. He was still a big name at that point. Kudos to Matt Barkley, by the way, for sticking in the league. Still in the league now. Sticking in the league.
He was on the Giants practice squad this year, I feel like.
So, yeah, I mean, good for him. He's still collecting paychecks in the NFL, so that's awesome. But, like, it went everywhere. And that would never happen, like I said, like during a non-lull during the season. But there's nothing going on. People are looking for content, and that was just something that they could publish and put up. And we're good for the day now. Like it's just something to, you know, kind of fill their content for the day. And, you know, it's crazy from my perspective. My name's everywhere. Matt Barkley's name's everywhere. But like, yeah, I mean, that's kind of how like weird nothing kind of stories can just boom spread like that because there's nothing else to talk about.
And take on a life of its own. And then, yeah, the player maybe doesn't like totally get again, like the proper context or. Anyway, it's kind of a mess, really. It seems like a really messy thing, and I don't love it from a vibes perspective, from like the Eagles energy, like some of the Eagles energy, like the AJ Brown stuff behind it, in terms of just like doesn't feel amazing. But I think it's quite possible that it just, like we keep saying, doesn't really matter because it's nothing ultimately.
AJ Brown, by the way, like really good dude, and not like a crazy like wide receiver diva that we've, you know, seen locally and around the league. He's not like that, in my opinion. He's a good player. I think his teammates really like him. And he's always been really, he's been really respectful to me. I can't speak for everyone, but really respectful to me. And I think other people that have interviewed him over the last 2 years in Philadelphia, I have no problems with him whatsoever. And I don't think he has any problems with like the regular beat writers that interact with him or anything like that. And he just seems like a totally normal guy. Like, so like the idea that he's kind of become this figure that's kind of being painted that way maybe not, again, not by us, but is kind of being painted that way. Just, I don't know, sort of like among, I don't know. I don't want to place blame on however it's happened, but he's kind of been painted that way. And that's just not who he is as a person, in my opinion.
I think that's his issue. He feels, on his own words, I think what he said on WIP, he feels misunderstood. And I think he is being misunderstood. I think that's an issue. I get that. And I'm sure we're talking about Jalen Hurts being young, by the way. AJ Brown's not that much older. He's also like a young guy. And I feel like, especially too, when you've been as dominant as he's been, and then you're still like, well, it's like, what the hell? Like, what more can I do on the football field to like avoid kind of getting this ire? So that's not to say he's handled every situation maybe like perfectly, or maybe he should channel some of his energy in a different way at times or whatever. But yeah, there's definitely like people, AJ Brown's a leader. He's a team captain, and he's also like considered to be a vocal leader. And think about how, you know, he was the one who admitted he took accountability with the Jalen Hurts, AJ Brown. He said, like, you know, we kind of freelanced at the end of that Seahawks game, like, and took a bullet for Nick Sirianni when he didn't have to, after Sirianni took a bullet for him. So
also when he got the celebration penalty that they wound up winning that game. I forget what game that was, but at the end of that game, he had the celebration penalty, and whoever they were playing, they got 15 added extra yards and a chance. Or did it hurt? Was it Commanders? Yeah, I think it was the Commanders game.
In Philly.
Oh yeah, because he beat Forbes, and then he put the ball down. Forbes was on the ground. He put the ball down in front of Forbes, which was dumb, and he got a penalty for it. And it could have cost him. It wound up not, but he took accountability for that too.
For sure. Yeah, I'm not saying AJ's perfect here, but yeah. Also, you see like this clip from, you know, Peter King on WIP going around on whatever Thursday or Friday. It was like, the Eagles need to figure out AJ Brown. No, they don't. It's already figured out. He's a great player.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, there's going to be an interesting conversation to have in the future when it comes to, you know, paying Devontae and everything. But that has nothing to do with like AJ Brown's personality, I think, or his talent level. That's just that's like a roster machination philosophical standpoint. It's not about like he's a problem and we need to fix that. Like, just that seems to be some of the suggesting out there in this nebulous, weird reporting thing is like, well, AJ Brown's really talented, but is he part of the problem? They collapsed? No. No, he's not. I mean,
6-1-0.
Everyone's part of it on the team, but like, he's not the place to. Not like, oh, if we need to fix it, this is the place to start. No, there's way other many places to start before you get down to AJ Brown. So anyway, anything else, or is that all you have?
No, I think we talked way too long about a story that didn't even that's not even a story.
Okay, well, let's take a break here, and we'll come back. As I said before, getting used to the YouTube version of this, if you're here with us on YouTube, there won't be a break. If you're on the audio feed, you'll hear an ad. So, Jimmy, we will be
back after this.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And we're back here on BGN Radio, which in addition to Right to Sell and Craft Jerky, which you can get at righttosell.com, also brought to you by Wrong Crowd Beer. Jimmy, this is some of your beer that you still have to pick up. Yeah, Phyllis, that is Dan's grandmother.
Okay.
It is an oatmeal stout. And we have Modern Mullets there as well. And that is a Weizenbach. I've had both of these. They're both really good. Let me read you really quickly. The stout.
Weiss, I think. Like it's a Weiss beer.
You're probably right.
Yeah.
Brewed with a large, this is the Phyllis, brewed with a large amount of dark specialty malts and house toasted oats. The smooth, roasty ale's dark chocolate richness is enhanced greatly by caramel and oatmeal notes. This recipe was the first batch ever brewed at our Westchester location. That's not beer, that's stout. So, you know, an OG here, which you can get by going to Wrong Crowd Beer Company in Westchester, Pennsylvania, or checking out your local beer place. And what do you do, Jimmy, if they don't have it?
You go in there, you just start screaming like at the top of your lungs in the store.
Don't.
No, just ask kindly. I happen to love Wrong Crowd beer, and I would love it if you got some Wrong Crowd beer in stock here so that I can purchase the Wrong Crowd beer from you, and then you can make money and save it over time and buy a yacht in your later years. So we all win if you just get the Wrong Crowd beer in here. Seems like a no-brainer, right?
It seems like a no-brainer.
That's how you can explain it to the shopkeep.
Yes,
that does not have the Wrong Crowd beer. By the way, you know, Weiss beer, there's a place, it's not there anymore, but like on the, like sort of on one of the little islands on the way onto Long Beach Island, I guess it's Cedar Bonnet Island, it's called. There's a place, it was the Dutchman's, that was the restaurant part. And then there was an outside part called the Quelly, where you could sit outside during the summer. And it was awesome because you'd sit out there, you have like, you know, you'd be at like a table, like out on a deck that was on the bay. And like, you know, and the bridge was right there too. So you'd see kind of boats coming like under the bridge each way. And people would go to this Quelly from their boat. So they'd go there by sea as opposed to land. And it was so much fun just sitting on the deck, watching boats come in, like people like that are kind of like inexperienced boaters trying to park their boat, trying to like almost kind of like parallel parking is the wrong way to put it, but it's difficult parking, trying to park like in like a sort of a narrow dock area so that, you know, when they got like 6-7 people in their boat, and it'd be fun just watching people fail over and over again, trying to park their boat. But we'd be out there with Weiss beers. Mm. And it's a great like summer kind of beer to drink outside. So probably good timing for them to put that out now. I mean, it's still late February or whatever, but spring, summer, right around the corner. I'm looking forward to some good outdoor beer time. And I feel like Weiss is a very good option for that.
As I like to say, and is not the official tagline, Wrong Crowd is the right place to be. let's just hit some of these coaching hires that the Eagles made, because they officially, and obviously
we already knew about most of them by reporting, but the Eagles made them official. Yeah.
And they had already officially confirmed the Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio hires, but these ones I'm about to say, there's 11, are all now done and dusted. I'm just going to run through each of them and I guess interrupt me if you want to say it. I mean, so TJ Paganetti, the Eagles needed an assistant offensive line coach, and he's worked with them before, so that's pretty chalk. Ronnell Williams was the Eagles nickels coach that they brought in last year. He's actually been moved over to Eagles assistant linebackers coach / defensive quality control coach. That kind of seems like a demotion, or at least, you know.
I don't know. I mean, it depends on how important that nickels position really was in the first place.
That's fair.
I mean, it seemed like it actually wound up being pretty important last year because they lost Maddox and they lost McPherson, and they were trying to convert McPherson sort of. I mean, he played slot some in college, but he played outside almost totally with the Eagles in his first couple of years, and they were making him into a slot. Then he had to deal with guys like, you know, like Eli Ricks, and Sidney Brown got a chance at nickel a little bit.
Bradley Roby.
Bradley Roby. So there was a lot of guys in and out of that slot spot all year. Mm-hmm. So nickels coach actually made a lot of sense, but they really struggled at that spot last year. And maybe not probably had nothing to do with coaching or whatever.
Yeah, the personnel was
a lot of guys that couldn't really do it. So like that's a spot that they got to fix this offseason, by the way. But interesting that they did away with that position. I guess Vic Fangio just didn't have probably has never had that before, didn't feel the need for it. And they probably liked Ronnell Williams enough to keep him instead of just saying, we don't want the nickels coach anymore, you're fired, bye. So they found another home for him somewhere. So I think that's, you know, just says something that they do like that guy, but they don't want that position.
Could be a case of him wanting to stick around potentially too, because he's a Chester, PA native, you know, so might just want to be, you know, closer to home.
Okay.
Just a speculation there. But so there's that. I think it's worth bringing up, like, he's one of the very few people from the defensive staff last year who will be back this year, obviously in, you know, more of a minor role relatively to everyone else. But it's not a lot. I mean, they mostly gutted the defensive staff, with the exception of someone also like Tyler Scudder, who was the assistant linebackers coach. He got promoted to mm-hmm. that last year, kind of is now down, quote unquote, if that's what it is, defensive quality control coach. People have been, myself included, kind of wondering about this title that the Eagles kind of rephrased Tyler Yelk from as Eagles assistant to the head coach to Eagles head coach quality control, which also just kind of funny with the timing of like the D-Gun Big Dom thing. Is that kind of what sounds like what Big Dom is doing on the sideline, really?
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know.
I got a little clarity on that. I actually asked the Eagles about that. And it's basically just, I mean, he'll work with Nick is basically what it is. Like, you know, quality control guys are, this is probably, I hope this doesn't sound like an insult, but they're like, they're way more glorified intern is the wrong way to put it, but like, you know, they're doing like a lot of sort of like the crap work on the coaching staff, but that's a guy that'll be tied closely to Nick. He's not controlling Nick in any way, not wrangling Nick in any way or anything. He's basically there to assist Nick, and then also have some other quality control responsibilities as well. But that was actually a sort of a promotion for him.
Okay.
That is the way that it was communicated to me. So it's actually a little bit of a step up for that guy.
Then we have Doug Nussmeier, who we already knew about and was pretty much like a lock to be hired ever since the Eagles hired Kellen Moore, because they've been together in Dallas, and then they were together in LA. That'll be the Eagles' new quarterbacks coach, replacing Alex Taney. Worth noting that Nussmeier is like way more experienced coaching quarterbacks than Taney. And I think that's not everything, but I think the Eagles are leaning on that, the fact that this is someone who has a lot of experience. And then in addition to Nussmeier, another Cowboys Kellen Moore connection is Kyle Valero, whose previous title in 2022, when he last was on staff in the NFL, was Dallas Cowboys quality control coach and analytics. He's had analytics in his title for several seasons. So Valero actually was on the Detroit Lions coaching staff when Kellen Moore was there from 2012 to 2013. And then they overlapped in Dallas together from 2015 to 2022. So they've been around each other for some time. He has a background as more of like an assistant wide receivers coach. But again, the last 2 years, he's actually had like that analytics title added, and now he's officially listed as Eagles offensive assistant. So I don't really, know a ton about him specifically, but the point of like Nussmeier coming in and Valero coming in, it's clear that like Kellen Moore has some level of influence on the coaching staff and the offense.
Yeah. I think it's also interesting the guys that kept their jobs is probably worth noting. Nick, of course, Michael Clay was going to be, obviously Jeff Stoutland was never going to go anywhere. You and I had actually kind of done we ran through very quickly the positional coaches and whether we thought they were going to stay or go at the time. Kevin Petullo we already knew he was going to be staying. So that's easy.
Sirianni's boy. Yeah.
I think we both thought that Jamal Singleton was going to stay.
Right.
I remember you pointing out that Jason Michael was really close with Nick and he was likely to stay, even if the tight ends maybe didn't have a great year. Jeremiah Washburn, I think we both had as a stay.
Yep.
Aaron Moorhead is the one that maybe, I don't know if I would call it surprising that he got to stay, but he's a weird case in terms of when you look. So I think it's easy to grade a positional coach based on how that positional group played in any one season from year to year. And you know, how much credit does he get for, A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith being as good as they are? Like, I don't know, but probably, they didn't get anything.
Probably should be more than zero, I guess, right?
Yeah, yeah. They didn't get anything out of Quez. They didn't get anything out of – they didn't get much out of Olamide Zaccheaus. Julio Jones isn't going to be coached at this point in his career. He's been in the league so long. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, they obviously like him because he's been around for a little while. remember they had that stretch where they had like a new wide receivers coach like every year for like four
every
or five
single
years
year from 20 so they, what like 15 on or so.
Yeah, it was like four or five straight years they had a new wide receivers
2016
coach. But, so he's been there for a while now, and I think that's fine, but like I think he was one of the guys that we weren't sure on. And then some other low level guys, like not, I don't say low level, but like not positional coach. They don't have their own position, like Joe Panunzio, a special assistant special teams, Ted Rath, the guy that you always see like running around on the sidelines, congratulating
guy.
Players after like a 5-yard gain. He's the VP of player performance. They kept their head strength and conditioning coach, Fernando Noriega, and then Tyler Brown, the special, more of like a kicking guy, and Eric Dickerson, offensive quality control. They all kept their jobs. So 13 guys kept their jobs after that disastrous season, which is maybe a little more than I thought would. I mean, they did. They certainly made big changes. Like they changed their defensive coordinator. They changed their offensive coordinator. They changed a bunch of positions on defense in particular, like defensive line, linebacker, the defensive backfield. So all three levels, they changed those guys out. But most of the guys on offense kind of stuck around, even though, in my opinion, the offense pretty sorely underperformed last season.
That's why I thought they might change wide receivers coach. It's not just how they coach the receivers, at least, you know, in the past when Doug talked about how his coaching staff worked, you know, like the wide receivers coach, which was Mike Groh, and he got a lot of credit for it when they won the Super Bowl. Did red zone or third down? Like he did a specific area that they did extremely well in. So, you know, maybe like,
yeah, they're not just coaching receivers. Their responsibilities go beyond that. They're doing like more, they're doing more in like the
specializing
game planning. Yeah, then is led on sometimes.
And maybe Moorhead did well in whatever that area is. I don't know, but I'm saying I thought that just that they might want a different, again, like maybe someone connected to Kellen Moore and part of that. But in any case, that's all who's back. By the way, the Michael Clay thing, I think, as you know, this is really leaning into the bit for me. But, you know, when you talk about like Brian Johnson and what that could look like when you have a coordinator who like you actually maybe give a little bit more time to, I just think that's an interesting thing to like to think about or follow along with, because same people, a lot of the same people I'm sure who wanted Michael Clay gone, self included, also wanted Brian Johnson very much gone. And I would say Michael Clay did worse than Brian Johnson did at their respective jobs, at least last year.
They're brutal on special teams in 2022.
I'm not trying to relitigate the whole thing. We don't need to do that. I'm just saying it's just worth considering coaches can improve. And maybe sometimes it takes going to another place, but whatever. In any case, what's done is done. Let me wrap out these coaching hires.
Ranked pretty low, in special teams in 2022, despite Jake Elliott being awesome.
Yes.
So, like, it's hard to be ranked as low as they were when your kicker is as good as Jake Elliott is.
Right. And as we've talked about before, it's kind of like a weird thing to parse through when it comes to the credit Michael Clay gets for Jake Elliott, because Tyler Brown is more of the kicking specialist.
And also, I mean, let's give Jake Elliott the lion's share of the credit for being.
And he's, Jake Elliott's great. You know? And also,
they're number one in DVOA in 2023.
Yes.
Eagles special teams. So the improvements they made were drastic.
Totally agree. All right, Christian Parker, his official title with the Eagles after being the Denver Broncos defensive backs coach is Eagles passing game coordinator / defensive backs coach, and he's basically at the top of this trio of Roy Anderson, who is an unreported hire. He was the Seattle Seahawks secondary coach last year, now the Eagles cornerbacks coach, and then the Eagles also have Joe Casper, who had been in Philly the 2 years prior to last season, was the Miami Dolphins safeties coach, is now the Eagles safeties coach. So the Eagles have at the top their defensive passing game coordinator, defensive backs coach, and then a safeties coach and a cornerbacks coach. So a little bit more of like a specialty thing going on there. And also the Roy Anderson thing is like slightly interesting in that he overlapped with Vic Fangio both in Baltimore from 2006 to 2009 and then in Chicago there from 2017 to 2018. And he was actually Sean Desai's replacement in a bit of a way in Seattle last year. So kind of funny that the Eagles hired his replacement and then also hired a lot of his associates as well with the Fangio stuff. So That's the defensive backs. And then real quick, we already talked about Clint Hurt as the Eagles' new defensive line coach. Mm-hmm. He also has the senior defensive assistant title that Matt Patricia solely had last year. And then Bobby King is the Eagles' inside linebackers coach, as opposed to, as you mentioned, the aforementioned Jeremiah Washburn as the defensive end slash outside linebackers coach slash he's also had kind of like that front office involvement in the past too.
So Parker's the interesting one to me. Oh, sorry.
No, that's it. Like, boom, that's all the things.
Anyway, Parker's the interesting one for me because, you know, he also got passing game coordinator in addition to the defensive backs title. Mm-hmm. And he's only 32. So he's been kind of a riser in his young career and kind of, you know, coach for, you know, four different colleges. Broke in into the NFL with the Packers in 2019, was there for a couple years as a quality control guy on defense. Last 3 years, DBs in Denver, and now he gets this promotion with the Eagles. And of course, in Denver, you know, I don't know how much credit you give him from Patrick Surtain and Justin Simmons, but, you know, both of those guys had a pair of all-pro seasons under his watch. So, you know, he didn't mess them up is one way that you can maybe put it as a check mark in his favor. But he's a young guy and seems to kind of be on the rise. And obviously, Vic Fangio likes him. So we'll see how he goes. But he seems to have a fairly important role among these hires that the Eagles just made official on Friday.
Parker, Hurt, Anderson, and Casper all have worked with Vic Fangio. And yeah, that seems very much worth noting that, again, the Eagles are giving their new coordinators some level of influence.
Yeah, these are Fangio hires. Yeah. You know,
the only one that wasn't, I believe, is Bobby King at linebackers coach. But yeah, so, you know, it's not just a coincidence. And I think it makes some level of sense in terms of you want to have a cohesive, you know, vision, people pulling in the same direction and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But it is noteworthy because typically, you know, in a lot of organizations, the head coach has more of that say or more of that sway and say, I would say. Didn't mean to rhyme that, but I did. And in this case, you know, you see that, although you made the point that a lot of Sirianni's original coaches or, you know, people before staying, and certainly he hasn't totally been stripped of power, you're seeing like still like the power being eaten at, like scaled back a little bit. So That's all I had on the coaches. Why don't we take another break here, Jimmy? But before we do, if I need to buy, sell, or rent a house, who would I talk to?
Oh, yes. You would speak to Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors, of RE/MAX. 856-906-9295 is where you can call or text her. Again, spring right around the corner. That's when people start putting houses on the market. So if you're just, if you're just interested in knowing what your house might sell for, she can do like a market analysis for you. That's no cost. 856-906-9295. Call or text her there for any of your real estate needs. Brandon,
back after this.
Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors, Roach Realtors, Roach Realtors. Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors.
She's the greatest.
856-906-9295.
Back here on BGN Radio, we're going to finish this episode with some stay or go. And Jimmy has done the duty of, you know, narrowing this down to players who are, you know, conceivably in contention. Right.
They're the most debatable guys.
We're not going to do Jalen Hurts, for example, who is actually going to be staying on the roster.
Yeah. We'll start with the quarterback, Marcus Mariota.
I'm going to say go on this one. And I think there's a situation where if like the market just isn't there for backup quarterbacks or no one wants to come after him at all and he's just sitting out there for a bit in free agency and you can get him for less than what, like the $5 million or so they paid.
It was $5 million he made. Yeah. Last year. Yeah,
sure. Like I'm sure they would not have, I don't think they would scoff at having him back at a discounted rate, but I mean, he was so bad in training camp last year.
Yep.
he wasn't like terrible when he actually had to play in games, but you know, a small sample size. But I mean, look, if you're looking to, I know they value backup quarterback and everything, but if you're looking to like find value and you have Tanner McKee showing the promise that he did. And also if you want Tanner McKee to get better, I feel like you kind of have to give him like second team reps, because let's be real, he didn't really get a lot of reps last year because he was the third string guy. And if he was getting them, you know, he's also playing with guys who like aren't really going to make a practice squad even necessarily. So it would be really nice to me to actually see what Tanner McKee can do if you gave him more second team reps, if you gave him, you know, better talent to work with in practice. And I think that's what they should do. I think they should let Tanner McKee, I'm not saying you can't bring in some kind of veteran, especially you're going to need a third quarterback too, but I would like to see Tanner McKee get the number two job. And that just doesn't really make sense to me then to bring Mariota back. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, Mariota, in addition to not looking good in training camp, he did not play well in the preseason games and was really thoroughly outplayed by Tanner McKee in the preseason games. I mean, you and I don't get to watch practice during the season because once training camp is over, we're out. We don't get to watch practice. We get to watch them stretch and warm up a little bit during the season, but otherwise we don't get to see the fun parts of practice.
Wouldn't that be funny, I mean, if like we could and we were doing like regular season training camp? Like,
well, we did. I mean, they cut that off during the Andy tenure. There was one, like Andy actually came into the media house one day. And this is around the time when like a lot of teams are starting to cut off access to practice like during the season. And Andy came in and was like, personally told us, instead of just having like a PR guy, he came in and was like, hey guys, we're not going to have you in practice anymore. So I actually respected that he came in and told us personally. I mean, it sucked that we weren't, but like there were times where like you get to see him watch it. You get to watch them like practicing a trick play and then you'd see it in the game. So, you know, that was kind of fun from that perspective, but yeah, we're not allowed to watch practice anymore.
Anyway,
so again, the point I was going for on that was, you know, we don't know what Tanner McKee looked like throughout the season in practice, whether he continued to get better or whether, you know, it's just, I don't know, he got hot during training camp or the preseason or whatever and just kind of fell off a little bit thereafter. So again, that's kind of an unknown, but I'm with you. Like, he seemed like a player worth to, you know, like he very quickly made the team, you know, in training. Like, it was like, okay, that guy's gonna make the team. Or it's like, you know, Clayton Thorson in the past, you're like, that guy's not gonna make the team or shouldn't make the team.
I think we even saw that in OTAs, like I was saying last year. Like, I saw enough in OTAs alone to know that, okay, this isn't Clayton Thorson.
Yeah, like this guy's gonna make the team. And you know, and there's a debate whether he should be the two last year, like during the preseason when he was thoroughly outplaying Marcus Mariota. So yeah, I'd be in on giving him a chance to be the number two. But even if he's not, I feel like you can get a better quarterback for what Mariota cost anyway. I just don't think he was good. So if you want to pay $5 million for, and maybe $5 million is not the right number because the cap went way up. So whatever the equivalent of $5 million in 2023 is to 2024, let's say it's $6 million. Yeah, I think you can get a better quarterback than Marcus Mariota at $6 million, or just get a comparable quarterback as Mariota, but pay him a little less, paying like $3-4 million or something like that. I think there are better. I don't think he's a good value, rather, at what he was paid last year. I think they can do better. So I'm with you. I think he's a go.
On the cap thing, I'm glad you brought that up because that was a big story on Friday. It's going up more than expected, which I just think, let me know if this take is too cynical. Who cares? In terms of like, it's not like, oh, the cap went up. Now the Eagles have way more money to spend than other teams. It's all relative.
Everyone does.
Everyone's cap space went up. So it's not like changing anyone's spending power. I mean, it helps out the teams who are closer towards the bottom, who, you know, might have been like really tied up against the cap and couldn't do anything. But
I think it helps them on something like for the Eagles specifically. I think it pushes them further in the direction of being able to cut a guy like James Bradbury and, you know, taking the hit on him.
We'll get to him next episode.
Yeah. But I think it helps the cap strapped teams that like really weren't going to be able to maneuver and do anything. I don't think the Eagles were in that category anyway. I think they had some maneuverability. But I think like, you know, it does help the Eagles in this case, whereas it doesn't really help the teams that have a buttload of cap space anyway.
True.
Like, it doesn't really help those teams much, but it does help the teams that, you know, either were cap strapped, like the cap hell teams, like the Saints certainly helps them.
Yeah.
And then teams that are like, you know, that are like, oh, decent enough shape, but could use a little more room, like the Eagles, I think it helps them. But again, like you said, it's not just going up for the Eagles. Right. It goes up for everyone.
I mean, I guess everyone knows that, but it's just kind of the reaction's a little funny to me because it's like, I just don't think it changes a whole lot. It's good, sure, but it's not like, oh, this is a game changer. Like the Eagles found suddenly 30 million more cap space that no one else has. Anyway.
It was also expected that it was going to go up substantially, but right. It went up a little more than was expected.
Yeah. I just don't think it changes much, like in the big picture, is my point. Like, I don't think it's not like Howie Roseman woke up on Friday and saw that news and was like, oh crap, this is awesome. Like, no. Anyway, what's your next player?
DeAndre Swift.
I'm going to say that he's not back because I think he gets more money elsewhere. And I also think that, to me, it is incredibly obvious for any team in the NFL that wants to sign a running back, wait out the market. There's so many good, so much a buyer's market. There's so many good running backs, relatively speaking, that are going to be free agents. You have Saquon Barkley, you have J.K. Dobbins, who I know he's been hurt, but like has been like pretty great when he's been healthy. Mm-hmm. You have DeAndre Swift, you have Tony Pollard, you have Josh Jacobs. Who am I? Like Austin Eckler is out there. There's so many free agent running backs. DeAndre Swift, obviously. There's so many free agent running backs. Derrick Henry is out there. There's so many running backs on the market that it would be incredibly foolish to rush to sign one when you can just wait. And also, not just even like you also, the nature of the position where people aren't paying those guys anyway for the most part. So
right.
There's no reason to get a jump on the market. Like, just let the market speak, because who cares? Like, who cares if you sign DeAndre Swift versus like whoever, like another one of those guys at some level? I don't think it's worth, you know, paying a premium to make sure you get that guy, you like your guy, as much as I'd rather just have the better value ultimately. So I'm going to say go, unless every team does that and all of a sudden there is no money for running backs and he decides to come back to Philly on a 1-year deal where he's from. But that's the only way I see him back.
Yeah, agreed on that. And like you look back to last year, the way they handled Miles Sanders, made the Pro Bowl, just like, you know, DeAndre Swift made the Pro Bowl this year. Miles Sanders actually got the best contract among all the free agent running backs on the market last year. And still didn't make that much. I think it was like 4 years, like 24 million or something like that.
And yeah. And how'd that go?
And it'd be like $6 million a year, whatever it was. And he had a terrible season for the Panthers. But like, you know, that was too rich for the Eagles' blood. And he made it pretty clear, like, he wanted to stay in Philadelphia, and the Eagles didn't seem to sort of share that sentiment. And, you know, might he have come back to the Eagles for a tiny bit less? Maybe. I'd say even probably, but I don't know. The Eagles didn't seem interested in, you know, matching that or anything close to what he made in Carolina, which again, wasn't that much, just $6 million a year. And that was at a time where the market was not good. Like there weren't many running backs on the market last year, and the Eagles didn't seem to care. And they wound up, of course, trading for Swift during the draft. So, you know, as you mentioned, good point that this year it's a much more loaded running back, a group of running backs to choose from, and they're just going to wait it out. And they'll see which run it. By the way, like the appeal of DeAndre Swift over a guy like Miles Sanders was his, you know, the potential contributions that he was going to make in the passing game. Just didn't see it. I don't know if it was Swift's fault or if it was the scheme's fault. I probably lean toward the latter.
Agree.
But his receiving numbers just weren't good at all. In 2023, he was decent as a runner. He was fourth or fifth in the NFL in rushing yards in the league, but he barely had like over 1,000 yards. So it was really a down year for, you know, running backs from a rushing perspective, league wide, and that's why he made the Pro Bowl. But that's a player that I would not be looking to, you know, break the bank on, especially when there are so many options. Let the market come to you, and you'll probably end up with some decent back if you just sit around and wait.
Right. They do need to add someone, obviously, because the only running backs they have under contract for next year are Kenny Gainwell and Lou Nichols from the practice squad, the futures contract. So, you know, Boston Scott.
And the guy they just signed, Ty.
Oh, true. Yes. Ty Davis Price.
Price. Yes. Thank you.
But I don't think that guy's any good, because I was looking at his numbers from both like college and the preseason. Yeah. 49ers, like they're not good numbers in the regular season. So maybe he is.
He's got good size, had some explosiveness, yeah. But his yards per carry at LSU were like 4.6, which is fine in the NFL, but in college that stinks. Like,
yeah.
For guys like probably going to go to the pro, usually like guys that get drafted are. You want to see them like over 6 yards per carry in college is ideal. And you're playing at LSU. So, you know, I don't know, like it's hot, better competition in the SEC or whatever. And then like in the limited number of carries he got with the Niners, he was under 3 1 year. And then the other year he was 3.5 or something like that. So I wouldn't be too excited about him either. He's lower on the excitement scale than, you know, like Trey Sermon was when they signed him.
I agree.
In my opinion.
I agree. I think, yeah, Trey Sermon had showed a higher ceiling at some point in time. Okay.
Next All right, next one. Guy. Quez, your favorite. Quez.
Hated Quez all along.
Favorite.
But it's true. Like, I liked Quez a lot at one point in time because, you know, we see him play well in training camp and I thought he could be something. But then it just became apparently clear that vision was not becoming a reality.
Yeah.
And for some reason, it's taken the Eagles coaching staff way too long to be able to like come to reality on him and have like a sober, honest assessment of who Quez Watkins is. And yeah, I'm going to say go, in part because I think he wants to go too. I don't think he wants to be back here. I think he wants, probably even true. If the money is similar, I think he'd actually rather go, whereas some guys would rather stay and not uproot their life. I actually think he would rather go to somewhere else where he feels like he might be able to get like more of an opportunity because he knows what the deal is here. Even if he thinks he's great, his perception is going to be that, you know, this team, the offense runs through AJ and Goddard and Devontae. So just, you know, he's not going to crack the top 3. And, you know, really he's behind that too with Swift last year. So yeah, I think he's going to find an opportunity elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, they benched him at the end of the year, too. At one point, he was basically like wide receiver 6. Like, he was in behind Britton Covey at one point late in the season. So
he should have been.
The Eagles eventually did realize what fans and the media already knew for a while, which is that bad things happen when the ball went his way consistently over a period of a couple years. And they finally benched him. And I think they're out on him as much as he probably also wants out. He's a clear go for me.
And also to say, throw in here that Julio Jones, I expect to be gone as well.
Yeah.
I mean, he might just retire. Like, wasn't really doing much. He had what should have been the Julio Jones game against the Cardinals and then turned out not to be. But he got to pat
his
He's going to
join guys like Art Monk, James Lofton, Mark Duper, who like played for the Eagles really late in their careers after like long after they were the players that they once were.
I wonder. This is like, so who cares? But I wonder if like when Julio Jones does go to the Hall of Fame, will the Eagles like tweet out /and/or like write an article?
I bet they
like,
do.
They probably say,
yeah,
probably
they
do.
Will.
Former Eagle Julio Jones goes to the Hall of Fame. Anyway.
I mean, so like when Terrell Owens got in, for example, it had like all the teams that he played for, like the Bills were on there, you know, like, you know, yeah. So like not just the 49ers and Eagles or whatever. You know,
I wonder
the two most noteworthy teams he played for.
This is a tangent, but I feel like the T.O. thing is interesting to me in terms of his Eagles legacy. I feel like you can't, as an organization, just ignore it. Like you have to, like, I think they should bring him back at some point, you know, and celebrate like that time in that era.
That was one
like,
year.
It was really good though. It was an exciting year. Like that's,
I mean, it was the benchmark of like, you know, best Eagles wide receiver season ever. That was the one that got like when we were like last year, we were talking about AJ Brown. Like, is he better this year than T.O. was in 2004? So he was like the benchmark.
He's the one who took my like Eagles fandom to another level. Like, I considered myself like I watched him in fan, but then I was like all in. I was just like, you know, so emotionally invested at that point. Because it was exciting and it was fun. And I know, it was a short-lived, but I think they should. But, I think he doesn't get enough credit for, like, how awesome he was in that Super Bowl when he was playing on, like, a broken leg or whatever. He was great.
Yeah.
That was unprecedented. So, whatever. It's a tangent. I think
from a reporter perspective, it would have been very fun covering him in 2005.
Oh, of course,
with the sit-ups in the driveway.
We're going on 20 years now in terms of like, let bygones be guys. Like, you're allowed to acknowledge the good part of it and bring him back in some capacity, you know, make him like a captain for a game or something, you know, I don't know, do something. He should be visible. He played a part in Eagles history, and I've always been a Tio guy, so I feel like they should do something to kind of like recognize that.
All right, anyway, next guy, Olamide Zaccheaus.
I think he should be back, and I don't know if he will, because kind of just seems like the mold of a player who, it might just be a situation where, like, if it's not an obvious stay, they might just kind of let him go, or maybe he feels like he can find a bigger opportunity elsewhere. But if I was the Eagles, I would keep him, and I would get him more involved, because very much unlike Quez Watkins, good things happened when Olamide Zaccheaus got the ball. Now, obviously, you know, it's not like he had enough or had great production, but I think that's more about the lack of opportunity, and I think he deserved more opportunity. But am I going to be heartbroken if he's gone? No, but I do think that he's better than I think for whatever team he signs next, I think he has the potential to be a good value. So why not the Eagles?
He was the number two receiver in Atlanta in 2022. Yeah, I guess he was the number three target behind Drake London and Kyle Pitts, but he was their number two. Kyle Pitts, of course, tight end, but he was a number two receiver, and you know, he had decent numbers there that year. Comes to Philly, and then he's barely the number, you know, I mean, barely even the number four option in the Eagles offense. With, as you know, I mean, everything that you just mentioned about Quez Watkins, about how he might want to seek another opportunity, he saw firsthand how the offense runs through AJ and Devontae and Dallas Goedert, and then there's a chasm between those three guys and whoever's up next. So, I mean, I don't think he's going to be back because he doesn't want to be back. I think the Eagles would be happy to have him back, but yeah, I think he's out.
I'm looking at his last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. His last seven games. So before like the Giants game, you know, where the backups ran. So not counting that one. He had just three targets on offense. So I'm not including the Cowboys special teams, you know, play, because that's not, it was a trick play. It wasn't part of an offensive design. But like, that's so pathetic. Like, he was doing good things, and you can't get him involved at all.
And also, if I'm him and I'm watching like Quez Watkins play over me for the first half of the season, I'm like, what? Like, this guy's playing more than me? It's ridiculous. I'd want out.
Anyway, I think he'll do well with a new team in a role, small role. Right, what's the next one?
Go bench player here, but Jack Driscoll,
and I think a relevant person, because this is Lane Johnson's top backup, right? Like, it's not just like, oh, whatever. Like, you know, okay, if Lane goes down now, who is it? Tell me today, who's Lane? Who's playing at right tackle if Lane Johnson gets hurt? Exactly. That's the point. You don't know. Like, so it's not an insignificant thing. Like, that's something they have to figure out. And obviously they have an opportunity to maybe address that position in the draft. They can figure that out this offseason. But, you know, it's just a lot to assume that a rookie can come in, or even that you'll get that guy that you feel comfortable with. So that's tough. What do you think?
I think he's gone. I think he's going to – so he had the one really bad game where Lane got hurt against the Jets.
Yeah.
And then a variety of guys just wrecked Driscoll the rest of that game. And he was a big part of the reason they lost that game. It was so bad at right tackle. And then he started against the Bills when Lane was unexpectedly a scratch for that game. We learned, I don't know, like 2 hours before game time that Lane wasn't going to play and Jack Driscoll was going to be starting. He played well in that game. And, you know, he's filled in at times. He started games. I think he was a guy that, like, early in his career, you're like, oh, this guy's, like, maybe on a starting trajectory. And then he wasn't at some point because he never really got better, in my opinion. But he's a versatile player. He's played right tackle. He's played right guard. Played a little left tackle at some point. So I think it's just going to be a matter of some team's going to be able to pay him more than the Eagles can afford to pay a guy that they know is just going to be a backup only, whereas he might get an opportunity to start for another team, whether he starts or not, who knows. But I think there's going to be some team out there willing to pay him more than the Eagles probably can.
Yeah, maybe he links up with like Doug Peterson again, or Roy Isvin and the Browns.
Right, maybe, you know, Browns.
Maybe, maybe there's a place where he can go where he has like a chance.
Jags are very O-line needy, so I could absolutely see that. Yeah,
a chance to compete at least, if not, you know, signing for a starting job outright, like somewhere where, you know, he'll be in like a training camp battle where he has the ability to kind of like maybe be a starter.
Or, Doug is a great call.
Or, you know, maybe the top guard off the bench, you know, or top, top backup guy, like your utility, your Alan Barbre, if you will. By the way, I guess it would be Fred Johnson who'd be starting at right tackle if you had to start like right now a game. And I think actually I kind of had forgotten about him, obviously, when I asked that. And yeah, I'd almost rather see, I wanted him to play over Jack Driscoll, when, especially after seeing Jack Driscoll struggle against the Jets, because it's like, well, why did you keep Fred Johnson around and give him an extension? If, and also he has experience playing at tackle, and he, to me, I always have felt like Driscoll looks like more of a guard to me. Like, he's not big. He's not like, he doesn't have the prototypical tackle size, I feel like, as much as Fred Johnson very much does. Right. So yeah, I would say he's going to be gone from a mix of probably, I guess if I had to guess, probably more so because he wants to be gone. I think the Eagles, you know, would take him back if they could get him back. But I'm going to guess that he wants to go elsewhere.
And finally, obvious one here, Jason Kelsey. I mean, obvious for me to, for him to be on our list, not obvious what he's going to do.
I think they should cut him. Get him out of here. I know your answer because I listened to that podcast I talked about with Clayton. I guess the one thing I have a trouble with is just like, is he going to go out like he did? Like, is that, does he really want to go out that way? And now the problem with that is it's not a guarantee you go out better if you come back, you know, it could get worse.
Yep. Yeah.
So I'm arguing against myself. I guess I'm going to say he's not going to be back. I think the Schefter thing, it doesn't come from nowhere. People were like, oh, well, Schefter, whatever. And I know
I don't even know what he said. What did Schefter say?
The day after the Bucks game, Schefter said, he didn't say Jason Kelsey is going to retire. He specifically said Jason Kelsey told his teammates that like he's done.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean Jason has to be beholden to that decision. But yeah, I just think, you know, with Jason like kind of seemingly enjoying retirement, and I don't think it's totally, you know, up to him. He said when that fan was like, you know, don't retire or whatever. And it's like, I'm trying not to, or whatever. You know, I think there's a family conversation there. And, you know, maybe Kylie Kelsey, you know, kind of wants him to come be part of the family more so and not be away.
Yeah.
And very understandably so. And like, you just, you know, it's so grueling. And he just has this unparalleled, like, transition into a new career, like that so many NFL players don't have available to them, or or can, but like don't actually have that reality. And I think he's comfortable with me sharing this. Our good buddy Trey Thomas, who used to be on the podcast, like I could just get a sense from him sometimes of like, retiring is boring, because then it's all of a sudden it's like, well, now what? Like, now what do I do? And and Trey would be like, wife wants me out of the house, man. Like, you know, because it's like, she doesn't want me hanging around at home. Like, she's like, go do something. So, and obviously Trey has done a lot of different stuff between his painting and his podcast and appearances on here and whatnot. But I think like people don't always think about that part. Like, you think about like retirement, because, you know, we think about retirement.
Careful more what like, you wish for, Kylie.
Well, we also think about retirement in more of like, I feel like a normal people, quote unquote, normal people standpoint where you know, like you're older, you know, like you're in your 50s or 60s or whatever, right, you know, age you are.
These guys are like early to mid 30s,
right?
Or so, even late 20s sometimes.
Yeah, you're like your whole life in theory in front of you still. So, you know, it's a big decision for sure. But ultimately, I'm not like convinced, obviously, with how much time it's taking me to answer this freaking question. I'm gonna lean towards he is not back.
Okay, so you say go. Okay, I thought you were, the way that you were kind of presenting that, you were gonna say stay.
I'm close. I'm not. I don't feel convicted, but if I have to place a wager, and I guess I'm going to lean towards he's not back.
Yeah, I just watching him in the locker room after their playoff loss in Tampa. That dude looked like he was done with football, and like he was like, you know, I can't talk to the media, and he's like, he doesn't ever do that. He's always, you know, super media friendly, and he was like, I'm not talking, and he, you know, he left. So like, I was like, oh, that guy's done. Like he's not playing football anymore. Mm-hmm. And you know, as you mentioned, the Schefter report came out. I was like a day or two later, or whatever it was. Totally, it was unsurprising.
Next morning. Yeah.
Oh, was it the next morning? Okay, yeah. So totally unsurprising that that came out. That he had, you know, told teammates or whatever, that he was going to retire. And then Jordan Mailata, I guess, recently also kind of said that he thought that he wasn't going to be back.
Very definitively. He's like, are you kidding me?
Right. So, you know, I think the evidence is kind of there that he's probably not going to be back.
Mm-hmm.
You never know. I mean, these guys, it's hard to give it up when you love playing the game that much. And it's beyond just playing or whatever. It's the camaraderie with, you know, the other players in the locker room and that kind of stuff. And it's hard, like, you have that lifestyle for so long, and it's hard to, imagine the idea of being without that after mm-hmm. you've done it for as long as Jason Kelce has. So I don't know. We'll see. But I lean strongly toward him not coming back. Zach Berman actually made during that podcast that, you know, he and I mm-hmm. and Jeff McClain did. He made the point that, I guess he was listening to the Chris Long podcast, and Jeff Fisher had advised Chris Long near the end of his career, like, don't retire in a month that begins with J. So like, don't retire in January when you're really beat up from the season and, you know, your body's worn down and you might make a decision based on how you're feeling in that moment physically.
I think a lot of guys might retire if the decision had to be made in January. A lot more people would retire.
And then don't retire in like June or July, you know, like when the season's right around the corner, and maybe you don't feel like doing it at that point, or I don't know, whatever. So make your decision, you know, when you've had it, when your body's feeling okay, but you're not right up against the season. And, you know, when you can kind of think clearly about, you know, how, you know, what you want to be going forward as a person, as opposed to just being a football player. And he has that podcast, which is obviously mm-hmm. immensely popular. He's that dude's basically like a household name at this point, not just among football fans, but like regular people mm-hmm. because of the tangential affiliation with his brother and Taylor Swift, obviously. So, I mean, he's a super well-known person. It was, it made like I don't remember what publication it was, but like one of the
sexiest
men.
Yeah.
Like the top 100 sexiest men.
Yeah, up there with like Timothée Chalamet and who else? Like, you know, celebrities.
Imagine being on that kind of list, you know, if you're Jason Kelce. So like, He's not going to be out of the spotlight when he retires. He's very much going to be a notable, you know, personality. I'm sure he could find any kind of job he wanted as like a commentator if he wanted that.
There were rumors about that when he was out in Vegas that he was like interviewing with some of the networks.
Mm-hmm. He's done like media, schooling is probably the wrong way to put it, but like
training,
media
boot camp.
Training, with other players, that kind of stuff. So, you know, he's already kind of had that on his mind for his post playing career. You know, whether that's like as a guy that's like in the studio, you know, just talking about the game or whatever, or actually calling games as a commentator up in the booth. I think he could do any of it because he's smart, and obviously he knows football inside and out, and he's very he's very articulate. Obviously has like a insanely popular podcast where he talks a lot on that. So there's no doubt that he could do it. I think he's gone. Like I think ultimately he's going to realize that his body and his health, not worth risking it, you know, doing another season when, as you mentioned, there's no guarantees of, you know, any kind of success with this Eagles team going forward. So Yeah, I have him as a go, but it wouldn't totally shock me if he came back because, you know, it's hard to give up.
Yeah, I don't think it's impossible. And I think the money, you know, is relevant here. I think maybe less so in terms of he might be able to get it elsewhere, the broadcasting and whatnot. And that's ultimately part of why he would. I don't think Jason Kelce is solely motivated by money, but when the rumors of him first retiring started after the 2018 season, right? To be fair, like really, that's kind of when it really, I think there was a report out there at one point that he had like his family members had like said that Jason was going to retire. I think that was like after the 2018 or late in the 2018 mm-hmm. season. Well, I bring that up because like when you look at the cash paid on his over the cap page after that year, like you went up from, you know, 6 million in 2018. And I remember they redid his deal, I think a little bit early 2019 mm-hmm. to 8.5 million. And all of a sudden in 2020, when, you know, all these years are like, is he going to retire? Is he not? 11.5, 11, 13, 14.5. So, you know, that's a factor too. And being the highest paid center. And I think that's part of why, you know, I know he has good communication, good relationship with the Eagles, but it still is a contract negotiation and you want to have your leverage, right? So, you know, if you want to get the most money, you kind of have to at least at some level like, look like you might not come back because then the Eagles give you a lot of money to then come back. So even if you do definitely want to come back, you don't just say that, right? Because then it's like you're ruining your leverage at some level. Not that the Eagles still wouldn't pay him a lot, but, you know, I think you owe it to yourself to maintain leverage. So I think that's part of it. And like to in terms of like it's a big offer to turn down. Now, again, it might not matter if he has money elsewhere coming in from broadcasting. It doesn't matter as much. But still, if you're looking at this based on recent years, I'm sure he might get like 15, 16 million now or whatever. If you're looking at that 1 year, $16 million, it's a lot of money to turn down and say no to. So that's why, to the point of like why he could come back. Again, he might not need that as much, considering he can get it elsewhere, but it's not nothing. It's not like not anything to sneeze at.
That's, by the way, we've had a lot of media discussions on this podcast episode too. Don't break somebody's retirement. Let them announce their retirement. Why is it your place to, you know, like, I mean, I don't know.
I disagree.
Okay.
Cool? Am I going to say it's cool? No, it's not. But like, I don't know. It's Schefter's job to do that. So like, I don't blame him for doing his job.
I had Brandon Brooks's retirement. I had it. Like, yeah. I knew he was retiring. I knew beyond him retiring, I knew he was going to be taking business classes at Penn. Yes. So I had more than just his going to retire. And I actually went to him and the Eagles and I was like, look, I asked Brandon first, texted me and reply. Like, I was like, hey, can you just talk to me? And, you know, I'd like to get some background. Brandon Brooks.
No, I'm saying like, he's like texting you back.
Who
is this?
No, actually, during his press conference, when I asked my question, he apologized during his, I'm sorry, I didn't get back to you. He said like during his retirement press conference. Yeah.
Brandon Brooks, but anyway, he wouldn't do that.
Yeah. I think he was afraid by like if he replied, then I was going to say, oh, he's definitely retiring and I'm going to put it out there now. Yeah. He wanted to announce it himself.
Sure.
But I just wanted to talk to him, like get background so that I had a story ready to go for when he announced it. And then I asked the Eagles for their help on that and they weren't very helpful on that either. But I didn't break it. I let him retire on his own. I let him announce it on his own because I felt like that was something that
I get what you're saying. You know? It's not like a cool or fun energy to be like, you know, to preempt it. But I don't, again, if a reporter who's supposed to report on the NFL gets that information and like, you know, I don't know. And you're working for ESPN. I don't like defending Schefter.
So I'm certainly not saying what's the word I'm looking for here? I mean, he's well within his right to report that or whatever.
Especially again, like, he didn't say he was retiring. He said that he told his teammates he was retiring. There's a difference there. Like, he might not retire, but that doesn't mean Jason Kelce
relationship theoretically with Kelce either, as far as I know. Like, he doesn't know him personally, I assume. I don't, maybe he does. I don't know. So there's none of that. I mean, I knew Brandon Brooks, so I wasn't going to screw him over and be like, hey, he's retiring. I'm like, screw you, Brandon Brooks. You're not announcing it. I am. I'm the reporter that you've talked to, you know, a couple dozen times. But I'm going to announce your retirement. Take that. You know, so I don't know, whatever. Maybe like that I knew him a little bit factored into my.
I miss Brandon Brooks. Good dude.
Decision. Yeah. Very good dude. Anyway, I don't know.
I talked to him one time.
We got into so many media debates here, but
yeah.
Anyway, I didn't feel comfortable breaking his retirement. I felt like I would feel bad about it later, and it wasn't worth the, you know, the page views that would come with it, or like, you know, people citing me or whatever on the articles. That that wasn't worth it to me on how I'd feel about it later.
Yeah, I get it. That makes sense. It's not like, oh, I'm the guy. What are you gonna do? Like, put that on your resume? I'm the guy.
Right. Nobody remembers it a week later anyway. Like, who cares?
Yeah. Well, especially stories like that. Yeah. That where it's also just out anywhere. It's not like this bombshell thing that no one else was gonna find out, or, you know.
I think a lot of people assumed he was gonna retire anyway. So it wasn't like it was a surprise or anything like that.
Yeah. But yeah, one of my most favorite stories I did on BGN was with him. Talking about how the Eagles culture was different from like that. He was referring to like not the actual Patriots culture, having never played for them, but having played for Bill O'Brien in Houston, in that kind of thing. And just kind of, you know, how much like culture can matter. And obviously the Eagles took a step back after the 2017 season there, but like how they were having fun. And really, now, I'm not saying the Eagles were bad last year because they had a Belichick kind of setup where they weren't, you know, everything was miserable. But they weren't having fun. They were definitely not having fun last year. And I think that was part of the problem. You touched on that in that podcast, too, in terms of, like, where are the touchdown celebrations? Where are people looking happy at any point? And that was actually brought up in the Mike Garofalo reporting on Jalen Hurts, like, needing to be more available to his teammates or whatever. He said the Eagles like felt good about how Jalen Hurts, they wanted him to have fun at the Pro Bowl. Be like, go to the Pro Bowl and like have fun, like show your personality, like goof off. Like, it's okay. It's okay to enjoy this. Like, obviously, you know, you want to work hard and everything, but you have to have fun at some level too. And that clearly was not Eagles. The 2023 Eagles were not fun to watch. And in no small part also because nothing was fun about it. They weren't having fun. Okay. Anyway, any final thoughts, Jimmy?
No, combine is. I said no, and then I started to go into a final thought.
Here's what I got. So, are you going?
I'm going. I'm flying out Monday, and then I'm back Wednesday. Some of the guys like stay out from Monday until like Friday or Saturday or Sunday. That's too long to be in Indianapolis. I'm a little quicker. I go in for Nick and for Howie.
That's right.
And then for like some side things, I'll go out at night. It's actually a great place to go out and, you know, just kind of talk to a lot of other people network around the league and, you know, hear rumors and stuff like that. So it's a good information gathering event, the combine. And that's also when really that's kind of like when people say free agency begins, because that's when teams really start talking to, like, they have that legal tampering nonsense now where you're allowed to talk to agents 2 days before the official start of free agency, which it's funny because like as soon as the illegal tampering part starts, guys start signing like right away. Like it's very clear that conversations were had prior to the legal tampering. But at the combine, that's really kind of when teams and agents start talking money. You know, for guys that like are going to become free agents in a week or two. So yeah, it's important in that respect because the whole league is in this, you know, one town that's, and everyone's like in the very like central area of the city around the stadium and the convention center. So I don't know. It's a cool event from that perspective in that, you know, you can get some information there and certainly information will come out of the talks that we have with Nick and Howie. So I'm looking forward to that. I get in and out.
What are you going to ask them?
I don't know. There's so many different things to the one question that I have for Nick more than Howie. And I was just thinking about this morning because I was writing about, you know, my stay or go linebackers thing. You and I kind of talked about how, and not about this, not about linebackers, but how like they didn't play their young players enough early this year. Like Nolan Smith barely played at all. They didn't get Kelee Ringo involved at all early in the season. They didn't get Tyler Steen involved in any, like, they were playing Sua Opeta over him. Like, come on, like, let the guy that's going to be with the team for the next 5 years play. Like, let him have some growing pains. Mm-hmm. And when I was writing about the linebackers, you know what? They did that with N'Kobe Dean last year too. They couldn't get him involved at all during the 2022 season. Mm-hmm. Like, Kaiser White and TJ Edwards had to play every snap that year. Right. At linebacker. Like, you couldn't get N'Kobe in a little bit, just get his feet weighed a little bit. So my question to Nick was going to be like, is that philosophy going to change going forward? Like, you're going to try to, because when the young guys, when you needed them eventually in 2023, they were coming in cold feet. Mm-hmm. When every other team, like the teams that you're facing, they're playing like their best, you know, football of the season at that point. So I'm just curious if they've thought about how they, you know, are going to implement younger players going forward, and whether that's going to change from the way that they've done it during Nick's tenure. With the dad, I think it's a very underrated thing that hurt them this year, that they didn't get their young players involved early, so they were ready to go when they really needed them.
And then how much that, you know, playing the young guys can have an effect year over year, where Chiefs defense, you know, was not as good as it was certainly.
That's a great point.
In 2022, as it was this past season, but they played a lot of young guys who then got better. And obviously, it's not as simple as it's not as simple as play the young guys, then they get good. The talent has to be there. And sometimes you're playing them, but they stink, and it's not because they lack experience, it's because they're not a good football player. I think people struggle to admit that sometimes, like Jalen Reagor once upon a time. Like, the issue wasn't lack of playing time, just the issue is he stinks. But sometimes you have to find out if they stink or not, or if they can be good. Yes. And sometimes they can get better with more experience. And I agree with you that they haven't given their young players typically enough of a leash, or whatever you want to say, enough room to grow, honestly. So yeah, that is an issue. I think Bo should ask, if he's going, and if not, Zach should ask the same question that Bo asked.
I'm pretty sure Bo is. I think they're both going. Yeah,
I think he should ask the same question that he asked at the end of season press conference, where he asked about like the defensive line and then Howie Russell bottomed at Kobe Dean for like no reason. Yeah. And he should just re-ask the same exact question to see what happens. Like that.
Yeah.
Does he go back to N'Kobe Dean again? Who knows? but there's an idea. Okay. Yeah, my final thought is we're going long, so we should wrap it up, but we appreciate everyone listening. We'll be back next week with whatever, you know, comes out of the combine. I'm sure we'll have hopefully more actual substantive rumors to talk about.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll play our defense version of Stay or Go as well, get into any free agency buzz or whatnot, and any kind of combine draft, whatever rumors going on as well.
By the way, we were go on all six of the guys that I brought up. All of them were go.
I was on, I'm on a stay for OZ in terms of what I'd like to see. I do think it's probably more likely that he is not back on his volition, but I would keep OZ. So there you go. And again, I think Swift could come back if you wait out the market, and I'd be very much down with that too. I just wouldn't. It's just more about the philosophy of wait, like don't try to beat the market.
Right.
But if you do that and he's available, yeah, bring him back. Absolutely.
That's how they will play that, by the way. Right. That's how they absolutely will play that.
But it's not like go, like don't bring him back. No, it's like bring him back, but just bring him back in a way that is patient. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Check out, you know, this podcast on the Bleeding Green Nation YouTube channel. If you're not already watching, if you're just listening to the audio feed, it's also there. Make sure you subscribe and, what they say on YouTube, like hit that bell so you can get the notifications.
Hit that subscribe button. Hit that bell. Button.
Like, subscribe. Whatever the YouTube thing is. And check out our social media and everything. Our sponsor information, that's all in the episode description. So the links are there and the promo codes and whatnot. You can find that all in one nifty place. In addition to our social media handles, if you want to interact with us, you can also find us there. Check out my work at bleedingyournation.com. Check out Jimmy Kemsky's work at phillyvoice.com, and we'll be back with you next week.
Goodbye, everybody.
BGN.